president, of course, is very eager to change the focus.
But he has reversed his position on ending his task force on COVID-19. It's Thursday, May 7th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. You are a part of this program, so join us on any of our VOA Asia social media platforms. Also ahead, as restrictions ease, many health experts warn of a spike in the number of those who die from the coronavirus. China uses video game technology to come up with another way to scope out those with the virus. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump reversed course Wednesday, saying he would keep the coronavirus task force indefinitely, but refocus it on keeping Americans safe and reopening the country to commerce again. We welcome to VOA Asia Steve Herman, VOA's White House bureau chief. Tell us more about this, Steve.
Well, we have seen in the past day or so some contradictory statements about the fate of the White House coronavirus task force from both President Trump and Vice President Pence. And I think what's important to keep in mind, Ira, is not what they're saying, because it does tend to change by the hour. It is contradictory, but rather let's focus on what actually happens. And as of this moment, there have been no changes to the coronavirus task force. Now, what has changed, we no longer see the briefings like we had, these marathon briefings that would go on for more than 2 hours, mainly consisting of the president making long statements and engaging in sometimes contentious question and answer sessions with the reporters. But most significantly, we're no longer seeing the two prominent physicians, Deborah Birx and Anthony Fauci, coming out to make statements and answer questions from the media. So that's what has significantly changed so far.
Why is this happening?
Well, the president, of course, is very eager to change the focus. He wants people to go back to work. He wants to start an economic recovery. This is an election year, and he's very concerned that if everyone in the country sits at home, not only is that going to be a continuing economic disaster, but that could cost him the election. He would prefer to see people back at work and some recovery in the numbers for the economy. And he's acknowledged that this is going to cause more death. But he seems to be saying, not overtly, but if you read between the lines, that this is going to be the price that we have to pay to prevent the United States from some sort of sustained economic depression.
Yeah, just drilling down into that just a little bit more, he said it's time to reopen the country's economy, even if it means more people will fall victim to the coronavirus. He said the people of our country are warriors. He said in Arizona yesterday, will some people be affected badly? Yes, but we have to get our country open. What does the president of the United States face as far as reaction to people to that statement?
Well, Ira, I guess it depends on if you're a typical American citizen and you like being called a warrior in the battle against COVID-19. We know what happens to warriors that go into battle. Not all of them come back in one piece, and some of them die. And it's very interesting that the president is using this terminology, basically saying that Americans are warriors and going into combat against the virus. How does this play out 6 months from now when people go to vote on Election Day in early November? How many people have died at that point in the United States? How many people are out of work? What do the economic numbers look like? It's really hard to forecast that 6 months out. And it does seem, though, that the fate of the Trump presidency will depend on what that landscape looks like.
Steve Herman is the VOA White House bureau chief. Steve, once again, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Ira. Anytime.
These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. Philippine church and business leaders are expressing alarm over a government agency shutdown of that country's largest TV and radio network. Officials in Pakistan say a unilateral construction effort has erected a robust fence along more than 70% of that country's roughly 2,600-kilometer border with Afghanistan, and the coronavirus pandemic has not hampered that work. The U.S. Department of Commerce is close to signing off on a new rule that allows U.S. companies to work with China's Huawei Technologies on setting standards for next-generation 5G networks, according to people familiar with the matter. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Some of the nation's health experts are warning of an impending spike in U.S. deaths from the coronavirus with restrictions being lifted. The story from Associated Press reporter Jackie Quinn.
An analysis by the Associated Press finds most states are moving in the wrong direction, with known infection rates rising and rules easing. New confirmed infections per day exceed 20,000, and deaths per day are well over 1,000. Because New York and its suburbs are seeing a declining rate in cases, it looks like the five-day rolling average in the U.S. is dropping, but actually, it's increased. Governor Andrew Cuomo says there's a price to pay for opening too quickly.
More lives lost. That, my friends, is the decision we are really making.
White House Task Force Coordinator Dr. Deborah Birx says they're recommending that businesses be reopened in phases. I'm Jackie Quinn.
As global coronavirus cases approach 4 million and deaths near 258,000, foundations and organizations participated in an online initiative hosted by the European Union in a global effort to pledge for research, manufacturing, and distribution of a possible vaccine and treatments. Paris-based reporter Catherine Field talked with VOA's Lori London about the virtual first meeting on the cooperative effort to battle the COVID-19.
There had been a fear, particularly fear that the United States or China might get a head start on the vaccinations involved in finding some way ahead with the coronavirus, not just the vaccination, of course, but diagnostics. And so the European Union got together with these other countries to get the money together, to get pledges together, to ensure that if there is a vaccine, if there is some new diagnostic available, that it will be available, accessible and affordable to all, that it won't be just going to the richest countries. And that was why they really got together here the first day of this pledging to get that money together. Now, they got together $8 billion. That might seem a lot of money, but in this world, that won't go very far. That's going to go in, for example, $3 billion is going to be spent to develop, manufacture and distribute a possible vaccine. We're needing to look at another $2.25 billion to develop treatments. And we're going to need something like $800 million for testing kits. And then you've got whatever sum is needed to stockpile protective equipment. So that was what the money is for. It's just the start. We're still looking at a June 4th launch day for this global vaccination movement. But it's certainly a good start.
Was America invited, or was this out of concern that America and the Trump administration policy of America First would be prohibitive to the rest of the world?
The United States and China were invited to this global pledging event, but they didn't come. Of course, the big concern has been that because of America First policy, it might mean the unfair distribution of any vaccine. But people are still here hoping that China and the United States will change their minds. They will give more money to this pledge.
Well, I do understand there were some NGOs from the U.S., foundations and companies taking part.
Yes, Bill and Melinda Gates, they were there. Their foundation, of course, has been very much behind the coronavirus vaccination push. But the big name that came out of nowhere, no one expected, was she gave €1 million to this fund. And you could really see when the EU Commission President announced this that she was so pleased, because it really did give more of an international feel to this, that it really was the whole world coming together, giving money where they can to try and make sure that any global vaccine has fair access.
Paris-based reporter Catherine Field talked with VOA's Laurie London. Happening now in Asia, an Indian state on Wednesday halted trains taking stranded migrant laborers home so that work on construction sites could restart, a move widely condemned as amounting to forced labor. Authorities in the relatively prosperous southern state of Karnataka canceled 10 trains for migrant workers. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. A few years ago, using something called augmented reality, cell phone games became viral sensations. Today, a Chinese company has adopted the same technology to help fight a viral pandemic with thermal glasses that show what our eyes can't see. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports.
Using similar augmented reality technology that powered the popular game Pokemon Go, Chinese tech startup Rokid Inc. fashioned a cutting-edge tool that can quickly and unobtrusively screen people for fevers, a warning sign of possible COVID-19 infections. Thermal glasses that detect the temperatures of passers-by are helping security guards like Chen Guangjiang.
I've been wearing these glasses for a week. My job is patrolling this area and checking people's temperatures. These glasses are convenient compared to a thermometer. It's safe. We can keep a safe distance.
Rokid calls them T1 glasses and says they've sold roughly 1,000 pair after 2 weeks of production to governments, schools, and industrial parks. Rokid's vice president, Zhang Wenji, explains how remote temperature checking works.
An infrared thermometer connects to the glasses, which transmit data quickly, calculated by AI. So when you're wearing the glasses, you can immediately detect temperatures of people 2 or 3 meters in front of you.
The company says the sensor is accurate to 0.1 degrees Celsius, giving screeners a valuable tool.
I think right now the pandemic is not over yet. Measures like this can make employees like us who work in this innovation park feel safe.
Rokid says it's upgrading the T1 to simultaneously take multiple temperature readings. Wenji says sales are climbing in overseas markets as countries worldwide seek ways to combat the coronavirus. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news alert from VOA Asia. A powerful earthquake struck eastern Indonesia Wednesday, causing some residents to flee their homes, but there were no immediate reports of damage, and the country's meteorology agency ruled out the risk of a tsunami. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Most universities and colleges have required standardized tests for admission applications since the 1960s. Because the COVID pandemic has closed schools and campuses, a growing number of universities are waiving the test requirements for prospective students. Bronwyn Benito has more.
Every year, high school students take standardized tests, such as the SAT or ACT, to get into college. But the value of these tests has been debated for decades, and more than 1,000 colleges and universities no longer require them for admission. Since the COVID-19 quarantine, Cornell University has joined the test optional group, at least for now.
The idea that we could say something meaningful to the juniors that gives them a slight sense of relief, I'm talking about the juniors in high school, something to say, hey, don't don't sweat it. Don't panic too much. Maybe the fall will be different for you. Maybe it'll be better. Meanwhile, we just want to take one thing off your plate.
The debate over standardized tests argues that they reflect test-taking skills, not education or aptitude.
The COVID pandemic has behaved as a catalyst, more rapidly accelerating an already fast-moving movement. Our experience is that schools that adopt test-optional pilots for 1, 2, or 3 years, suspending test scores while they review, discover that it's a much better policy than requiring ACTs and SATs, and they will make those policies permanent when the pilot program ends.
Oregon State University Admissions Provost John Bockenstedt says there are other, better predictors for success in college.
Every college admissions officer I know and every university I know says solidly the best predictor of your performance is your high school GPA in those college preparatory courses. That's the only thing that helps us predict whether or not you're going to be a success in college. So that's really all that matters.
The College Board, which administers the SAT, told VOA in a statement, "We support colleges that are rightfully emphasizing flexibility for the admissions process for next year. The SAT helps ensure students are recruited by colleges and is one way for students to distinguish themselves on their college applications." But Cornell's Jonathan Burdick says large universities must include SAT and ACT scores to assess tens of thousands of applicants, so test optional at his university is temporary. But Bockenstedt says this is how many schools test the waters.
They might say it'll be 2 years or 3 years, and then we'll do the results, look at the results and do the research and see if, in fact, test optional policies have been good for us. Maybe they have skeptics on campus.
ACT researcher Wayne Camara says the value of standardized tests are backed by studies.
If they are considering going test optional, that they look at the research, not just the research from a single institution that's done this, but look at research across institutions, peer-reviewed research that really shows pretty conclusively the test optional has few benefits.
In the meantime, COVID-19 has accelerated how standardized tests will be evaluated in the future. Bronwyn Benito, VOA News.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Can the coronavirus survive in cold weather? Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you're sick or advised to by local authorities. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Many Australians would be reluctant to leave their homes or gather in large groups, even if the nation's COVID-19 restrictions are eased or lifted, according to a new study. Australia has had 6,849 confirmed coronavirus cases. Almost 59 patients have recovered, but 96 people have died with the virus. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
COVID-19 was first confirmed in Australia in late January 2020. To try to curb the spread of the highly infectious disease, the government closed Australia's international borders and imposed lockdowns on much of society. Cafes and bars have been closed, along with gyms, many schools and cinemas. Strict social distancing measures have also been mandated, and there have been fines for those who flout them. But as the curve of new infections is flattened, there is an expectation that some of the restrictions could soon be eased or even lifted. Australians are desperate for life to return to normal, but new data from Vox Pop Labs, a private research company, and the Australian Broadcasting Corporation has found many will be reluctant to embrace personal freedoms when the restrictions are relaxed. The survey of 2,225 people has revealed that only 1 in 8 Australians would go to a large event, fewer than 1 in 5 would fly, and only 40% would go to a bar or restaurant. Anne-Marie Turner is a physician who suffers from arthritis and is considered at high risk from COVID-19. She told Australia's ABC that she would stay home even when disease controls are wound back.
You know you're not exposing yourself potentially to this virus. You know, you can keep control over your own environment. You know, we love going out to restaurants, we love going to movies, we love going to the theatre, we love going to see music performances. I don't think I'll be doing that for a long time. If there was no vaccine and this virus was still prevalent, yeah, I think my lifestyle is going to be quite curtailed long term.
The findings of the research could have significant consequences for sectors worst hit by the COVID-19 pandemic, including the arts, hospitality and aviation. The government in Canberra is expected to announce Friday a timetable for some national restrictions to be eased. Officials now estimate that the cost to the Australian economy for every week COVID-19 restrictions remain in place is $2.5 billion. Unemployment is expected to double and hit 10%. The last recession here was in the early 1990s. There is a gloomy expectation among experts that Australia's proud record of uninterrupted economic growth will soon come to a shuddering halt. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Millennials in Asia say they are benefiting from remote working by using the extra hours to get more rest and pursue their hobbies. Some also feel that working from home has liberated them from the constraints of a traditionally hierarchical, the boss always knows best type of work culture. VOA's Julie Tabo has the story.
Many millennials in Asia are adapting well to self-isolation from COVID-19, especially in countries where commute times and working hours are some of the longest in the world. Young people are resting more and pursuing other interests.
I hang out with my boyfriend more, and I've just been having fun with my dog and just like taking her on walks and stuff.
I actually do a lot of activities after work. For the longest time, I didn't get enough sleep because of those activities. By working from home, now I have that one or two extra hours. I've had the luxury of working without feeling too exhausted, so that is really great.
For some Asian millennials, physical distance from the office has also meant freedom from a traditionally rigid work culture.
I just think that whole hierarchical culture and just like the whole mindset of like, because I'm older than you, because I've been working longer than you, I'm right, and I don't want to listen to my subordinates. It's like that culture is very strong here.
You know, in America, you can almost always go to your boss and just kind of voice your concerns, maybe give some tips or something that you're seeing. And in Korea, it's your boss is kind of like over there, and there's always like a middleman that you have to deal with before you can even get to your boss.
But some millennials in Asia are not as comfortable working from home, despite the advantages.
To be honest, for myself, I don't like to work from home so much because I cannot focus. Seriously, I will switch on my TV and then I will listen Spotify, and then you go into the fridge and get something, right? So you cannot concentrate at all.
But no matter the differences of opinion, remote working looks like it's here to stay for the foreseeable future. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Children have mostly been spared from the disastrous effects of COVID-19, but doctors in the UK and in New York are starting to suspect a link between COVID-19 and a small rise in the number of cases of children with symptoms similar to a rare but serious condition called pediatric multi-symptom inflammatory syndrome. A recent health alert by the New York City Health Department says 15 children between the ages of 2 and 15 with symptoms compatible to this condition have been hospitalized, some in intensive care units. The UK's Pediatric Intensive Care Society says many, but not all, of the children with symptoms of this syndrome have also tested positive for COVID-19. Health officials say the condition and its link with COVID-19 requires more study, but so far it appears to be rare. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can like us on Facebook, VOA Asia, or follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us at voanews.com as well. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our managing director, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Have a wonderful day ahead.